I was trapped. I wasn't in a position where I felt I could successfully detain Dom, and I didn't want to blow his cover and have him run. I did a 10-second imitation of a cat on roller skates. I pulled myself together, scurried into the bedroom, and dove under the bed. The reality of hiding under a bed is that it's uncomfortable, it's terrifying, and you feel like an idiot. I inched to the middle so there was less chance I'd be seen, and I tried to breathe quietly. There were two sets of footsteps on the stairs, and then there was a moment of quiet, and I knew they were in the living room.
"Nobody home," a male voice said, not Dom's. "Yeah, but I know he was here. I can smell him."
The second voice was also male, and again, not Dom's.
"Look around. Maybe he left something laying out that would tell us something."
"He wouldn't do that. He's living with Jelly. He's not going to let Jelly see anything."
"Look around anyway. People are stupid. They do stupid things. And maybe if we stay here long enough, he'll come home and we can persuade him to talk to us."
"We got his sister on ice. How much more persuading can we do? Personally, I don't think he knows where the money is."
"For Christ's sake, just look. Would it kill you to look?"
Holy crap. Dom's partners, and I was stuck under the bed. I went cold inside. I could feel everything liquefying in my intestines. How does this happen to me? How do I get myself into these situations? I heard them rummaging through the living room and kitchen. They came into the bedroom, and my heart rate picked up.
"These guys are such slobs," one of them said. "It's like two pigs living in their own slop." "You should talk. I've been in your apartment, and it isn't that great."
"Wait until I get my hands on the money, and you'll see great. I'll be out of that shithole apartment. I'll be cruising the islands in my boat. Did I ever show you a picture of my boat?"
"Only about a million times."
They were walking around the bed, and I could see their shoes and the bottoms of their slacks. The one guy was wearing scuffed brown tie shoes, worn down at the heel, and tan slacks with cuffs. The other was in jeans and beat-up cat boots with a gash in the toe. They went through the bureau drawers and rifled the single drawer in the bedside chest.
"There's nothing here," the one guy said. "What do you want to do now?"
"I don't feel like waiting. I got stuff to do. My wife's on my ass."
"I wouldn't know about that."
"Yeah, no one would marry you."
"Lots of women would marry me."
"Oh yeah? Who?"
"Lots of women. And I'm not paying through the nose for a woman I'm not even getting anything from."
They left the bedroom, and moments later I heard them on the stairs. The door opened and closed, and the apartment was quiet. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid to crawl out from under the bed. I was pretty sure they were no longer in the apartment, but what if I was wrong? I waited a couple minutes more and slithered to the edge, where I had a better view. I held my breath and listened. I carefully looked around. Now or never, I thought. I belly crawled out, got to my feet, and forced myself to creep down the hall to the living room. I almost keeled over with relief when no one was there. I hurried to the foyer at the bottom of the stairs and hesitated. If the two bad guys saw me leave, they might think I was coming from the downstairs apartment. Unless they watched the evening news. Then they'd know who I was, because I was blue. I locked the door, placed the key on the top of the door jamb, opened the front door a crack, and looked out. No one standing there with a gun in his hand. No black mafia staff cars with tinted windows lined up at the curb. I casually walked away from the house, down the block to the corner, around the corner, and angled myself behind the wheel of Morelli's SUV. I two-handed the key into the ignition and pulled away from the curb with a white-knuckle grip on the wheel. Okay, so I was a little freaked, but I hadn't messed my pants. That was pretty good, right? By the time I got to Morelli's house, I'd calmed down a little, but not entirely. It was almost noon, and Morelli was sitting on his front step with Bob. I plunked myself down next to him. He put his arm around me, and I collapsed into him.
"Either you like me a lot, or you've had a bad morning," Morelli said.
"It's both. I did some legwork and ended up at Jelly Cantner's apartment."
"At his apartment or in his apartment?"
"In."
"Were you invited in?"
"No, but I also wasn't told to stay out."
"Nobody home,"
Morelli said. Anyway, it was obvious someone was staying with Jelly, and it wasn't a woman."
"You think it was Dom?"
"Yes. And I wasn't the only one to reach that conclusion, because just as I was about to leave, two guys showed up." I felt Morelli tense against me and go silent for a beat.
"You told them you were the maid?"
"I didn't tell them anything. I was under the bed."
"This is why our relationship is stressful,"
Morelli said. I think they were Dom's two remaining partners. They were looking for him because they wanted the money, and they have Loretta. They're holding her hostage, but so far Dom hasn't come through.
Did you get to see them? Do you have names?
No names. One is married and one isn't. One of them lives in an apartment. One was wearing beat-up cat boots and jeans, and the other was wearing tan slacks with cuffs and brown shoes. I couldn't see more than that. What I didn't say was that the voice on the single guy sounded familiar. It had a slight rasp, like a smoker, and there wasn't a lot of inflection. I couldn't associate a name or face with the voice. I just felt like I'd heard it before.
I'll bring Bob in, and then I'll go to Jelly's and wait for Dom,
Morelli said.
Where's Zook?
Zook's in the house with Lula.
I got back about 10 minutes ago, and Lula's car was here, but no one was in the house.
Did you look in the backyard?
Yeah,
Morelli said.
No one's in the backyard. It's wall-to-wall mud. I think if I keep turning the hose on it, no one will dig there.
That's weird, I said, because I could swear I hear digging. Morelli listened.
It doesn't sound like digging. It's more like drilling and...
Oh, shit. What? Morelli was on his feet.
That's a jackhammer.
I followed Morelli to the kitchen and down the cellar stairs. Mooner was wailing away at the concrete floor with a pickaxe, and Lula had a jackhammer propped against her belly. She gave the jackhammer a blast of juice, and I was afraid her breasts were going to break loose from their moorings and knock her out. Gary and Zook were in a corner, mesmerized by the spectacle.
"This is my basement floor,"
Morelli yelled.
"You can't just go into a man's house and jackhammer his floor."
Lula jiggled to a stop.
"Well, excuse me. It's not like we weren't going to share the money with you."
"There's no sharing," Morelli said. "The money was stolen."
"It was over 10 years ago," Lula said. "Isn't there some kind of time limit, and then it's finders, keepers, losers, weepers?"
"No,"
Morelli said.
"Where'd you get the jackhammer?"
"I sort of borrowed it."
"Oh, great," he said. "A hot jackhammer."
"It's Saturday. You can borrow these things on a Saturday," Lula said.
"This is a lot of floor to demo,"
Morelli said.
"And after we demo the floor, we still don't know where to dig."
"Guess that's why there were directions," Lula said. "Probably it was like a treasure map. 7 paces north and 2 paces west, and the treasure is buried under the piece of floor with the X marked on it."
"I thought you had an appointment with your lawyer," I said to Lula.
"Yeah, I guess I better get going."
She turned to Morelli.
"You want me to come back and jackhammer some more when I'm done with the lawyer?"
"No," Morelli said, "but I appreciate the offer."
"So, like, now what?"
Mooner asked Morelli.
"This is majorly disappointing. I was counting on some moolah, man. Like, being a griefer doesn't pay a lot, you know what I mean? And a man has needs, right? Like, what happens when I have a craving for a Big Mo candy bar or a crab puff?"
"Here's a deal,"
Morelli said.
"I could use some security in the house. Suppose I pay you guys to protect the house. That means you have to keep people from digging in my yard, pickaxing my basement, spray painting my dog."
"Whoa, cool," Mooner said. "And how about the Zook Dooder and me? Can we do those things?"
"No,"
Morelli said.
"You have to protect the house from everyone, including yourselves."
"How much?" Zook asked.
$5 a day.
"No way," Zook said.
"10.
20, Zook said. "A piece."
10, Morelli said. "A piece."
"Take it, dude," Mooner said to Zook. "It's a cool gig."
"Me too?"
Gary asked.
"Yeah, you too,"
Morelli said.
"Should we be, like, packing heat or something?"
Mooner wanted to know.
"No,"
Morelli said.
"If someone comes to the house, you politely tell them to go away. If they won't go away, you call me."
"Gotcha,"
Mooner said. "Looks like we're done in the basement," I said. "Everyone upstairs for lunch." Gary had been quietly standing in his corner.
"I think it might be here," he said.
Everyone looked at him.
"I feel like I have a vision coming, but it's still in the back of my head. Sometimes it's like that. It's like brain constipation."
"Oh, man, I hate when I get that,"
Mooner said. "Maybe lunch will help," I said to Gary. Gary didn't budge from the corner.
"I think I should stay here."
I made sandwiches for Zook, Mooner, Morelli, Bob, and me, and I brought Gary's sandwich down to the basement. "How's it going?" I said to him. "Anything coming through?"
"I had a sort of tingle before, but it went away."
"Okie dokie. Shout out if you need anything." Lula left, and Mooner and Zook checked in on Minion Fire.
I'm going to get my cousin Mooch over here to finish the basement,
Morelli said.
Part of it's torn up. I might as well finish the job.
Mooch owned a small construction company. He specialized in renovation and fitting people into cement overcoats. His Yellow Pages ad read, Mooch Morelli, Demo and Disposal. Can you trust Mooch to let you know if he finds the money? I asked Morelli.
I'll keep my eye on him.
What about Dom?
You can watch for Dom,
Morelli said.
Stake out Jelly's apartment and call me if Dom shows up.
Chapter 14 4 hours later, I was still watching for Dom. My ass was asleep, and I had to tinkle. I got Jelly's phone number from Connie and tried calling him. No one answered, so I called Morelli. What's new? I said to Morelli.
Mooch and his guy Tiny have gone through 2 six-packs and have destroyed almost my entire basement. I think they only maybe have 4 or 5 more bottles of work left to do.
What did they find?
Dirt.
Are they going to dig up the dirt?
No, they're wasted. Mooch is lucky he hasn't jackhammered his foot.
I need a bathroom break.
No activity?
None. It looks to me like no one's even in the bottom half of the house.
I'd take your place, but I'm afraid to leave Mooch alone with the kids.
Afraid he'll plant them in the cellar?
No, I'm afraid he'll share my remaining beer with them.
So I had a dilemma. I had to tinkle, bad, and I had no one to relieve me. I could drive around and look for a gas station or convenience store with a bathroom, but that could take time. Or I could run across the street and use Jelly's bathroom. If I used Jelly's bathroom, I ran the risk of getting trapped again, not to mention contracting a disease. I did a mental coin toss, and Jelly's bathroom won. I pulled the key out of the ignition, shoved it into my pocket, and crossed the street. I let myself into the apartment, went straight to the bathroom, and lined the seat with toilet paper. Even with the toilet paper, I tried to be careful not to touch anything. This wasn't a bathroom that inspired confidence, and better safe than sorry. I was about to squat when I heard a crash and a sizzle, and an explosion rocked the building. I yanked my pants up and ran out of the bathroom. I got to the hall and saw a wall of flames race around Jelly's living room, creating an instant inferno. No way to get to the stairs. I ran back to the bedroom and slammed the door shut. I shoved the window up and crawled out. I hung by my hands, took a deep breath, closed my eyes, and let go. My feet hit first, and then I was flat on my back with the wind knocked out of me. I dragged myself to my feet and took a couple deep breaths. This wasn't good. I didn't want to be found here. I limped through the house's little backyard and half-climbed, half-fell over the split-rail wood fence into his neighbor's yard. I crept between houses and came out on the street behind Jelly's. A big black glob of smoke rose above the housetops into the sky. 2 police cruisers raced past me, and I could see the flashing lights of a fire truck farther down the street. I walked around the block and stood by Morelli's SUV across the street and 2 houses down. My face felt flushed from the heat of the fire and the realization that I could have died on the toilet. My back ached and my arm was scratched and bleeding. I was having a hard time breathing, and I could feel tears collecting in my throat and behind my eyes. I managed to get into the SUV, but I was paralyzed by the horror and unable to drive. Jelly's house was completely engulfed in flames. Firemen were spraying water on neighboring houses, and the fire didn't seem to be spreading. Thank goodness for that. Emergency vehicles clogged the street. Fire trucks, cop cars, EMS trucks. Even if I was capable, I couldn't leave. One by one, the surplus trucks began moving out. I waited for my opportunity, and then I left too. Morelli, Mooch, and Tiny were in the kitchen drinking coffee and eating sandwiches when I walked in. We need to talk, I said to Morelli. Morelli looked at my scraped arm.
Are you okay?
Marginally. Somebody blew up Jelly's house while I was in his bathroom. Everyone went slack-jawed and stared at me. I was staking it out and I had to go, I told them.
Jeez, Mooch said. Blowing up a house is serious stuff. Not in Trenton, but in most places.
Morelli paled.
You couldn't find a gas station? You actually broke into his house to use his bathroom?
It seemed easier, until the house blew up.
Was anyone hurt?
I don't think so. I think the downstairs apartment was unoccupied, and I was alone upstairs. It must have been a firebomb shot into the front window. I heard the glass shatter, and then the explosion, and then everything was in flames. I was able to escape by dropping from the bedroom window.
Why were you watching Jelly? Mooch asked.
I was watching for Dom, I told him. It's possible Dom's been bunking with Jelly.
Do you have any ideas about Dom's partners? Morelli asked Mooch.
There's been some talk lately about Stanley Zero. The fourth partner is a big mystery.
The name sounded familiar, but I couldn't place him. Who's Stanley Zero?
Football player, Morelli said. He was a couple years ahead of us, probably in Dom's class. Not good enough to make pro and too dumb to get into college.
He's in construction, Mooch said. He does framing for Premier Homes. He's been working for them for years.
Why is he suddenly linked to the robbery? I asked.
I don't know, Mooch said. Hard to say how these things start going around. A guy shoots his mouth off in a bar or talks to a girl, and next thing, it's public.
I looked at the cellar door. Is Gary still down there?
No, he went home,
Morelli said. Kentucky?
No, home here in Trenton. I'm not sure where that is. He said he had a headache. I imagine it was from listening to the jackhammer.
I got a headache too,
Tiny said. Morelli took the SUV keys from me.
I'm gonna take Mooch and Tiny home. They can come back for the truck tomorrow. We need to finish carting the concrete chunks out anyway.
Tiny was about 1,000 pounds. I had no idea how Morelli was going to get him into the SUV, and if he did succeed, I had a mental image of the tires going flat. We're out of food, I said to Morelli. You need to stop on the way home and get something for supper.
This is getting expensive, Morelli said. I'm paying protection money to 3 guys so they don't destroy my home, and I'm feeding them. Plus, I've now got Mooch and Tiny on the payroll.
I had Connie run a check on Jelly, I told Morelli. He's driving an orange Corolla. I have the plate number, but I don't think you need it. How many orange Corollas are there in Trenton?
I'll watch for it,
Morelli said, herding Mooch and Tiny through the house and out the door. Miraculously, Morelli got Tiny into the SUV and the tires didn't buckle. I watched them drive away, and I called Ranger. I wanted information on Stanley Zero, and Connie only worked a half day on Saturday.
Babe, Ranger said.
I need information on Stanley Zero. Place of residence, car, anything personal, like friends, wife, whatever.
How do you want it? Can I email it to you?
No, I'm at Morelli's house. I don't have my computer.
I can send it to Morelli.
That would work. How's Tank doing?
He's distracted.
Why doesn't he just break it off?
The man is confused, Ranger said. Sometimes it's difficult to tell what you want to do with a woman.
Are you speaking about yourself?
No. I know exactly what I want to do.
I knew what he wanted to do, too.
Is there anything else you need from me? Ranger asked.
Not right now.
There will come a time, Ranger said. Let me know when.
And he disconnected. I opened the freezer and stuck my head in to cool off. If there'd been any more innuendo in that conversation, I could have fried an egg on my forehead. Ranger was a successful bounty hunter because he was exceptionally intuitive and doggedly aggressive, and that was also his description as a lover. I removed my head from the freezer, and I brought an ice cream sandwich out with me. Morelli's computer was upstairs in his office. I was eating the last of the ice cream, so I sneaked past Mooner and Zook and tiptoed up the stairs. Ranger's office was ultra-modern and very high-tech. Polished glass, stainless steel, and black onyx surfaces with black leather chairs. It was dust and clutter-free. The computer and phone system was state-of-the-art, and there was a plasma television on one wall. Morelli's office was a mess. A red plastic milk crate held his baseball mitt, bat, and some tennis balls he'd collected for Bob. Stacks of dog-eared files hunkered in corners and against the wall. Smaller stacks of books he'd been given as presents or thought he might like to read but never seemed to get to were tucked between the files. A dead houseplant on a small table by the window. Coffee cup rings everywhere. A yard sale desk and chair. Running shoes that had seen better days kicked off under the desk and forgotten. And his computer, which was a nice new MacBook Pro, plus a DeskJet printer. I turned the computer on and brought up Morelli's mail program. I'm not a computer whiz, but I can do the basics. I knew it wouldn't take Ranger long to run the background check, but I relaxed in Morelli's chair for a moment before checking in. Truth is, I like Morelli's office. Okay, it could be a little cleaner, but it felt warm and comfy, like Morelli. I could see across the hall into Zook's room. It was a typical teen disaster. Rumpled bed and every piece of clothing he had with him was on the floor. I thought he was doing remarkably well, considering his mother was missing. I imagine there might be some tears when he went to bed at night, but during the day he managed to hold his own. Mooner was helping. Mooner wasn't the world's best role model, but he kept Zook occupied. I hit the Get Mail button, and Ranger's file came up. I printed it out and sat back to read it. Stanley Zero was married with two kids, but not living with them. He was living alone in a low-rent apartment complex off Route 1. He worked for Premier Homes. I already knew that. So maybe he was work boots, and he was the partner with the Crapola apartment. He'd run up his credit cards, but he wasn't in collection. He drove a red F-150 truck, 4 years old. No prior arrests. His wife was a nurse. Worked at St. Francis. She was living in a house that was owned jointly by Stanley and her, heavily mortgaged. The kids were 5 and 9. The typical American family. Except Stanley might have robbed a bank, blown up a house, and shot a guy dead. So I had Stanley Zero, Alan Gratelli, and Dom. If I could find the common thread, the one thing that brought them together, I might learn the identity of the fourth man. Or maybe there was no common thread. Stanley and Dom had gone to school together. Dom and Alan had worked together for the cable company. Maybe Dom was the organizer. I straightened Morelli's bedroom, made the bed, and did a superficial cleaning of the bathroom. I peeked in at Zook's room and decided not to invade his privacy. Stephanie Plum, Ms. Sensitivity and half-assed housewife. I heard Bob gallop from the kitchen to the front door, and I knew Morelli had arrived with food.
"Steph," he yelled. "I'm home."
Ricky Ricardo brings Lucy her dinner. I met Morelli at the bottom of the stairs and took a grocery bag from him. He handed the other bags over to Zook and Mooner.
"Meatball subs, potato salad, coleslaw for all of us," he said to Zook and Mooner. "The beer is for me."
I took the bag into the kitchen and put the lunch meat, milk, orange juice, and sliced cheese in the fridge. Morelli'd also gotten bread and a cake that said, "Happy Birthday, Ken." "A birthday cake?" I said to him.
"I know you love birthday cake, and apparently Ken didn't need his."
We brought napkins, plates, silverware, and soda to the living room, and Morelli remoted the television on. We crammed ourselves onto the couch and ate our food and watched the early evening news.
"And now we bring you our special report from that special person, Brenda," the anchor said.
Brenda popped onto the screen. Her face was blue, she was in full black leather bounty hunter mode, and she was in Morelli's backyard.
"Here we are at Aunt Rose's house," she said, "and as you can see, digging for the stolen money has already begun."
There was a shot of Morelli telling her to leave, and there was a full 30 seconds of Morelli turning the hose on her. The screen went black for a moment, and then Brenda reappeared in dry clothes, free from mud.
"Here we are back at Aunt Rose's house," Brenda said. "We aren't going to bother the hot guy who lives here because he might turn his hose on us again. And while I wouldn't mind seeing his hose in private, I'm not taking any chances in his backyard. As you can see, there's this big dump truck parked behind his garage. I had one of my crew climb up on the truck and look inside, and he said it's getting filled up with chunks of concrete. And even as we speak, I can hear the jackhammer working in Aunt Rose's basement."
Brenda aimed the microphone at the back of Morelli's house, and there was the faint sound of the jackhammer, which at that distance sounded like a woodpecker.
"As you all know, it's been thought the missing $9 million was last seen by Aunt Rose, and maybe this new development will bring us closer to all that money. This is Brenda signing off and saying, see you soon."
Zook gave a howl of laughter.
"Dude," Mooner said. "Awesome! Ratings fabuloso!"
The next shot was Brenda in the studio sitting opposite the anchor.
"That was an interesting piece of film," the anchor said to her. "I understand you've been an insider on this investigation."
"Yes, I have," Brenda said. "In fact..."
And at that instant, Gary crept up behind Brenda and tapped her on the shoulder.
"I have to talk to you," he said. "I had a headache, so I went to my bedroom to lay down. And I had another one of those dreams. You know, the big pizza dream. only this time the pizza was pepperoni and black olives, and it was very disturbing because it could fly. I saw it flying through the air.
Brenda rolled her eyes.
Gary, how many times have I told you to go home? Have you stopped your medication again?
The anchor was on his feet.
How did he get in here? Who is he?
I'm her cousin on our Grammy Mim side,
Gary told him. The anchor had his hand waving in the air.
Security!
You have to beware of the big pizza,
Gary said to Brenda.
It's not an ordinary pizza, and it's out to get you. And it might be when you're sitting on the toilet on Route 1.
I swear, Brenda said, you are such a nut.
Two uniformed guards appeared on the set, and the station went to commercial.
That was primo, Mooner said. The dude was like a real celebrity stalker, and the white hair is a good look for him. Au courant, but raging retro, like totally Warhol.
Morelli cut his eyes to me.
The really scary part of all this is I'm starting to understand Mooner.
Just think of it as learning a foreign language, I said to Morelli, pretending you're visiting the Republic of Moon. We finished the subs, potato salad, and coleslaw. Mooner sang happy birthday to Ken, and we dug into the cake. We ate half a cake, and the phone rang.
I'm at the police station bonding out Gary the Stalker,
Connie said.
Someone needs to take him somewhere and get him to shut up about the big pizza before he gets carted away and shot full of Thorazine. And it's not me, because I'm late for Joanne Garber's baby shower.
I'll come get him. How do you want to do this?
I'll take him with me and we'll make the switch at the firehouse, Connie said.
I'm on it. I took possession of Gary 15 minutes later. How did you get to the television station? I asked him.
I drove. I followed Brenda from her hotel. I tried to talk to her before she got into the car, but she was moving too fast. And then she parked in a special lot at the station, and I couldn't get in. So I had to find a place on the street, and then it wasn't easy getting into the building. I had to climb in through a window in the back.
Most people would leave a message on Brenda's cell phone.
I'm not most people.
No kidding.
And she keeps changing her number,
Gary said. Because she doesn't want you bothering her?
She's very brave, and she doesn't want to impose.
Has it ever occurred to you that you might be delusional?
That's what the psychiatrist said, but I think he's wrong. There's an evil flying pizza out there, and it's got Brenda's name on it.
I'm assuming your car is still parked on the street.
Yes.
I'm going to take you to your car, and then you're going to go home.
Yes.
Where is home?
Morelli's garage,
Gary said. Excuse me?
I have a little camper that I tow behind my car. I parked it in Morelli's garage yesterday, and it's still there.
Does Morelli know this?
I don't think it ever came up.
We located his car. He followed me to Morelli's house, and we both parked at the curb. I got out and looked at his white Taurus. I thought this was a rental, I said to him. No one buys a white Taurus.
It matches my hair, Gary said. And it's my zodiac sign.
It made as much sense as anything else in my life. Have you had dinner?
No.
Prowl through the fridge and make yourself a sandwich. If you're lucky, there's still some birthday cake left.
Whose birthday?
He asked. Ken's. I brought him into the house, and he settled in with Zook and Mooner so he could lurk. Morelli was in the kitchen loading the dishwasher. I brought Gary back here, I told him. He's helping out with the wood elves.
That's a comfort.
Yeah, I knew you'd be excited. I had Ranger run a check on Stanley Zero. I have the printout upstairs. One of us should take a look at him. Chapter 15. The phone rang at 2 a.m. Morelli came awake first, a bare arm reaching across me to get at the bedside phone. Not the first time he'd gotten a call in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
he said. There was a short conversation, and Morelli hung up and flopped back onto his side of the bed.
You're not going to believe this, he said. On second thought, it makes perfect sense. That was your friend and mine, super cop Carl Costanza. He's working a shift with Big Dog, and they got a report that there were lights in the cemetery. Turns out it was a bunch of people who all got the idea to dig up Rose. One of them was your Grandma Mazur.
Is she in jail?
No. Everyone ran away when Carl and Big Dog drove up.
But your grandmother recognized Carl and told him she needed a ride home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Carl said they're bringing her here. She didn't want to get dropped off at your parents' house in a police car because people would talk.
I rolled out of bed, scuffed through the clothes on the floor, and found what I needed. Zook was in the hall when I opened Morelli's bedroom door.
I heard the call, he said. Was it about my mom?
No, it was about my grandmother. She's having a friend drop her off here, and then I'm going to give her a ride home. Zook smiled.
I bet she did something bad, and she's afraid your mother will ground her.
Close enough, I said. I padded downstairs in the dark and looked out the front window. No police car yet. I walked through the house to the kitchen to get a bottle of water and checked on the yard. No one digging, but there was a bar of light under Morelli's garage door. Gary was still up. Or maybe Gary was afraid of the dark. Lucky for Gary, there was electric in the garage. Unfortunately for Morelli, since he was paying the bill. I returned to the living room, and Morelli joined me. You didn't have to get up, I said to him.
No way was I going to miss this.
We saw headlights glide to a stop in front of the house, and we went out to say hello to Carl and Big Dog.
Here she is,
Big Dog said to me, opening the door for Grandma.
Maybe your mother should put a bell around her neck.
He looked at Grandma and shook his finger.
No more sneaking out at night. It's dangerous.
Thanks for the ride, Grandma said. She looked in the car at Carl. My regards to your mother. Carl smiled and nodded. Thanks, I said to Carl and Big Dog. I really appreciate this.
We would have hauled her in, but it was too embarrassing, Big Dog said. She was the only one we could catch.
Morelli waved them off, and I buckled Grandma into the SUV. Where's your shovel? I asked her.
I didn't have one. I was just supervising. I went to Elmer Reiner's viewing, and Marion Barker was there with Biddy Kulesha. And Marion said she heard Rose was always saying how she was going to take her fortune to the grave. And one thing led to another, and it ended up that we thought it would be a good idea to dig Rose up and take a look. So Biddy gave me a ride, and we met Marion and her two grandsons at the cemetery. Her grandsons are real big guys, and they were doing the digging.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about that money, but it's just got a hold of me. It's a beaut of a mystery.
Morelli drove the short distance and parked in front of my parents' house. We watched Grandma sneak in, and we waited a couple minutes to make sure she didn't sneak back out.
You should snap me up, Morelli said. Not many men would marry you after meeting your grandmother. You're lucky to have me.
I looked over at him. Is that a proposal? There was total silence for a couple beats.
I'm not sure. It just popped out.
Let me know when you're sure.
Would you say yes?
Morelli asked. I'm not sure.
I bet I could convince you it would be a good thing, Morelli said. How about taking a look at my assets?
Oh, good grief. It took us about 20 minutes in the alley behind the bonds office to appreciate his assets. When we finally returned to his house, all the lights were blazing and two squad cars were angle parked at his curb. Morelli slid to a stop, and we hit the sidewalk at a run.
What's going on? He said to the cop at the door.
Your house guest heard someone break in and called 911.
Zook was standing in the hall, hanging onto Bob's collar.
Right after you left, I heard someone at the back door, Zook said. Bob heard them too, and he started barking, and he never barks if it's someone he knows. So I grabbed Bob and brought him into my room, and then I locked my door and called 911. I put all my lights off and looked out the window at the backyard, and just before the first police car showed up, I saw two men run out of the house and across the yard.
What did they look like?
Morelli asked.
I don't know, just average. I couldn't see. It was real dark, but one of them had a shovel.
You have forced entry on the back door, one of the cops said to Morelli, and the basement door was open. Other than that, everything seems okay.
After everyone left, Morelli walked through the house, checking windows and doors. He searched the basement, the closets, all nooks and crannies, and under the beds.
Tomorrow, we get the alarm system up and running, he said.
Morelli took his cereal bowl and coffee mug to the sink.
I'm going to take a look at Stanley Zero this morning. Do you have any plans?
I'm doing laundry.
That's pretty exciting.
I'm washing sheets, I told him. Morelli slid an arm around me and kissed my neck.
I love when you talk about sheets.
Now here's the thing I like about Morelli.
There's a lot of variety to his sexiness. He can be hot, he can be funny, he can be loving, he can be short on time and hungry. This morning, he was playful. "Would you like to know what I'm going to do to you tonight when you slide between those sheets?" I asked him. The depth of his eyes instantly changed, and he left playful behind.
"Yeah," he said. "I'd like to know."
"You have to wait."
"I'm not good at waiting."
"No kidding." Morelli broke out in a wide grin.
"Have I just been insulted?"
"Only a little. Did you get the background report on Zero? I left it on your desk."
"Got it, thanks. Keep your eyes open here."
"You betcha." 10 minutes after Morelli left, Zook shuffled down the stairs and into the kitchen. He helped himself to a bagel and took it into the living room. Moments later, Gary was at the back door.
"I thought I smelled coffee."
I pointed to the coffee pot. "Help yourself." He looked at the bag of bagels sitting on the counter. "Would you like a bagel?" I asked him.
"Yeah, that'd be great."
Morelli was going to have to find the $9 million and take a cut just to pay his electric and food bills. Sunday mornings are quiet in the Berg and surrounding communities. The women go to church, and the men take the Sunday paper and sit on the can. I've never understood the attraction of sitting on a toilet, pants at your ankles, newspaper in hand. I could think of a million better places to read the paper, and yet this is a firmly adhered to Sunday ritual for Berg husbands. My father couldn't imagine a Sunday morning without this quality bathroom experience. Unmarried men seem to be exempt. After Morelli's car left his neighborhood, there was no more street traffic. No dogs were walked, no kids on skateboards, just Sunday morning quiet. And that's why it was twice as startling when the brick sailed through Morelli's living room window. Zook and Gary were on the couch, deep into the world of Minion Fire. I was walking through the living room on my way to collect the laundry, and the glass shattered. We all jumped, and there was a collective gasp of surprise. Jelly's apartment explosion and fire were still fresh in my mind. I looked at the brick, which had a small box attached, and my first thought was, "Bomb!" I rushed over, picked the brick up, and threw it back outside via the broken window. Gary and Zook were frozen on the couch, eyes huge, mouths open. I went to the front door and looked out. The brick was just sitting there on Morelli's postage stamp lawn. The box attached to the brick looked small to be a bomb, but heck, what do I know? I watched it for a couple minutes and cautiously crept out to take a closer look. I was standing there looking at the brick when Mooner strolled up and stood next to me.
"Whoa," Mooner said. "That's a brick."
"Yep." He bent down to see it better.
"It's got a box attached to it."
And before I could stop him, he picked it up and shook it to see if the box rattled.
"It's got the dude's name written on it," Mooner said.
I craned my neck and read the writing on the box. Joe Morelli.
"What's it doing sitting here in the yard?"
Mooner wanted to know.
"There's no mail delivery today. It's a Sunday. Even I know that."
Someone tossed it through Morelli's window.
"Get the heck out," Mooner said. "Was the window open?"
"No," I told him.
"Get the heck out," he said.
The box was held to the brick with electrician's tape. I took the box upstairs, set it on Morelli's desk, and called Morelli. "How's it going?" I asked him.
"Not good. I got a call from dispatch. 2 gang killings in the projects. I'm on my way there now. I don't know when I'll get home. Sometimes these things take time to sort out. What's up with you?"
"Someone pitched a brick through your living room window, and attached to the brick was a box with your name on it."
"Is this for real?"
"Yep."
"Put the brick in the box in the garage. Don't leave it in the house. Better to blow up the garage than the house."
"Do you think it's a bomb?"
"I think it doesn't hurt to be careful. I'll deal with it when I'm done here,"
Morelli said.
"And I'll call Mooch and get him to replace the glass. And I'll make arrangements to have an alarm system installed."
I disconnected and stared at the box. I was faced with a dilemma. Gary was living in the garage. I didn't want to explode Gary. No big deal, I thought. Just ask Gary to pull his camper out of the garage. The doorbell chimed, the door opened and closed, and I heard Lula ask for me. "I'm upstairs," I yelled at her. "Come on up." Lula was dressed down. Running shoes, black stretch yoga pants, and a black stretch t-shirt that looked like it was going to burst at the seams. "What's the occasion?" I asked her.
I went to try some wedding gowns yesterday, and it was a depressing experience. First off, they only had itty-bitty sizes for those skinny bitches. Like us big and beautiful women don't get married. And then they said they were going to have to charge extra on account of they were going to have to order so much material. What the heck is that about? It's not like I'm getting a circus tent. So anyway, I decided I'd join a gym. I figure with the money I save on less material, I could pay for the membership.
That's a terrific idea. I should do something like that. What gym did you join?
Well, I didn't exactly join a gym yet. I just got the clothes.
It's a start, I said to Lula.
Damn right, Lula said. What's his package with Morelli's name on it? And why is it on a brick?
Someone pitched it through his living room window just now.
Get the heck out. What are you going to do with it?
Morelli wants me to put it in the garage for safekeeping until he gets home later today.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Lula picked the box up and tested its weight.
It could be something important that requires immediate attention. I think you should open this sucker.
It could be a bomb.
Okay, then. Let Gary open it.
I did an eye roll.
Nothing wrong with that, Lula said. He's always saying how he knows things. Let's see if he knows it's a bomb. Anyway, it don't look like a bomb.
It's all wrapped up. How could you tell?
Well, if it was a bomb, it would be a little one.
I heard Bob jump off the bed and head down the stairs. I need to get the glass cleaned up before Bob steps in it, I told Lula. Put the box down and look up some gyms in the phone book and we'll check some out. 5 minutes later, I walked back into Morelli's office and found Lula unwrapping the box.
It's not a bomb, Lula said. There's a note in here and something all wrapped up.
She handed me the note. That was addressed to Morelli, I said to her.
Yeah, but I didn't want him to get himself all blown up. Besides, I kicked the box around some and nothing happened, so I figured it was safe.
I unfolded the piece of paper and read the printed message. I know you have the money. Give me the money and I'll give you Loretta. Just so you know I'm serious, I'm enclosing a present. Every day I don't get the money, you'll get another present. Hang a red scarf in the upstairs window when you want to make a deal.
I like getting presents, Lula said, but this one don't smell too good.
I had a bad feeling about this present. I carefully peeled away the tissue paper, and we stared at a pinky toe with red toenail polish.
Good pedicure, Lula said.
I clapped a hand over my mouth and told myself I wasn't going to throw up. I was sweating at my hairline and little black dots were floating in front of my eyes. They'd chopped off one of Loretta's toes, and they were going to keep chopping until they got their money.
Maybe we should give him the money, Lula said.
We don't have the money, I whispered.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
I don't want Zook to see this, I told her. He's just a kid. He doesn't need this. And I can't stand around and let them chop off Loretta's body parts. We have to find either Loretta or the money.
And we're going to do this how?
I have a lead.
Okay, Lula said. But what about the pinky toe?
It's evidence. I'll put it in the freezer for now. I'd seen army barracks that were more attractive than Stanley Zero's apartment complex. Hummingbird Hollow consisted of 6 cement-block, 3-story buildings clustered around a large macadam parking lot. As far as I could see, there were no trees, no flowers, no hummingbirds, and the only hollow was an empty sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. The mailboxes would lead me to believe that there were 24 units to each building. Zero lived on the second floor in Unit 2D, with his windows facing the lot. According to my report, he lived alone. I found his truck in the lot and checked the plate to make sure. He's home, I said to Lula. We were in Lula's Firebird. It wasn't the best surveillance vehicle, but it was better than my Zook car. Lula slid into a space behind and to the left of the F-150.
Now what? Lula asked.
Now we wait.
I hate to wait. He don't know me. How about if I go up and ring his bell and ask if he wants some Lula? Then I could look around and see if he got Loretta tied up without her toe in his closet.
They don't have Loretta here, I said. It's not private enough. You can probably hear everything through these walls. I'm hoping he'll go out and lead us to his partner. We sat for an hour looking up into his windows, watching the building's back door. Nothing.
He might not even be in there, Lula said. Maybe someone came and picked him up and we'll sit here till the cows come home.
Then we'll check out the car that drops him off and maybe that car will belong to the partner.
You sure you don't want me to go up there and poke around? Lula asked.
I cut my eyes to her. You're not going to give up, are you?
I should have brought my bride magazines to read. I got nothing to do here. I sit here much longer, I'm going to get that thing they were talking about on the morning show. Restless leg syndrome.
Okay, already, go see if he's home. Lula marched across the lot and into the building. 5 minutes later, she was back at the car.
Nobody home, Lula said. I tried the door, but it was locked.
That doesn't usually stop you.
I fiddled with the lock a little, but I couldn't get anything to work. Too bad, because this here's a good opportunity to snoop.
I called Ranger. I'm watching an apartment off Route 1, and I'd like to get in, but it's locked up tight.
I'll send Slick.
I gave Ranger the address, and Lula and I waited with slightly elevated heart rates. Breaking and entering was always tense, especially since it was a crapshoot if Lula could squeeze under a bed. A shiny black Rangeman SUV pulled into the lot, and Slick got out and went into the building. He was out of uniform, dressed in jeans and a baggy shirt. Wouldn't be good if he was seen picking a lock in Rangeman black. 5 minutes later, he walked through the door, looked my way, and nodded. He got into the Rangeman SUV and drove away.
Rock and roll, Lula said.
We took the stairs to the second floor and went directly to Zero's apartment. I turned the knob, and the door opened. We stepped inside and closed the door.
Hello?
I called out. No one answered. We were standing in an area that was living room, dining room. Beyond was the kitchen and a hall that would lead to the bedrooms. The furniture was old and collected for comfort with no thought to design. Empty beer cans and styrofoam coffee cups with days-old coffee still in the bottom were left on end tables. A couple newspapers had been tossed to the floor. Mud had been tracked onto the rug. Not that it mattered. The rug looked like it hadn't been vacuumed in a long, long time. Maybe never. We glanced at the kitchen and moved into the hall. It was a one-bedroom, one-bath apartment, and the bedroom door was open. Lula and I looked through the open door and froze. There was a man on the floor, toes up, eyes open, bullet hole in the middle of his head. Dead.
I hate when we find dead people, Lula said. Dead people give me the heebie-jeebies. I'm not doing this no more if we keep finding dead people. And I'm getting out of here. I'm not staying in no room with a guy with a hole in his head.
Don't panic, I told myself. Take it one step at a time. I followed Lula back to the living room, did some deep breathing, and punched Morelli's number into my cell phone.
Talk,
Morelli said. I found another dead guy.
You want to run that by me again?
Lula and I decided we'd talk to Stanley Zero, so we knocked on his door and the door swung open, and we found a dead guy in the bedroom. There was a moment of silence, and I knew Morelli was either popping Rolaids or counting to 10. Probably both.
The door swung open when you touched it, he finally said.
Yeah. No need to go into details on how the door got unlocked, right? I mean, he didn't ask how it got unlocked.
Where are you now?
In the living room, I told him.
Anything else I need to know before I call this in?
Nope, that's a whole enchilada. I disconnected and noticed Lula had her keys in her hand. Are you going somewhere? I asked Lula.
I figure you don't need me anymore, so I thought I'd go home. I got things to do. I gotta think about a honeymoon. And this place is gonna be swarming with cops, and I hate cops. Except for Morelli. Morelli is fine.
If you leave, I have no way to get home.
What about Morelli? What about Ranger? What about calling a cab?
What about waiting in your car in the parking lot? I said to her.
I guess I could do that.
She hot-footed it out of the apartment, and I thought there was a 20% chance she'd be in the lot when I was ready to go home. Not that Lula was unreliable, more that her cop phobia overrode her best intentions. I figured I had 5 to 10 minutes before the first cop showed up. So I told myself to get over the dead guy and think about rescuing Loretta. I did a quick run through the kitchen, being careful not to leave prints. I found leftover fast food chicken and expired milk in the refrigerator, and dots of blue mold on the bread that was sitting on the counter. Not enough mold to slow down a big, tough construction guy from Trenton. No scraps of paper lying around with a phone number or address. I walked back into the bedroom, and as best I could, I avoided looking at the body. A pair of beat-up cat boots had been kicked off beside the bed, and a framed photograph of a large powerboat was propped on the dresser. I'd found the third partner's apartment. And probably the guy on the floor was the third partner, since he was in socks. I guess I could have seen if the boots fit, but I didn't want to know who he was that bad. Let the police figure it out. There were clothes all over the place. Hard to tell if the apartment had been tossed, since Zero wasn't the world's best housekeeper. I went through all pockets, omitting the ones attached to the dead guy, and I looked through drawers. I did a fast bathroom check. I looked out the bedroom window and saw the first police car angle to a stop in the lot. He'd come in without a siren, probably at Morelli's suggestion. A second squad car followed. Eddie Gazzara got out of the second squad car. That was a relief. We'd grown up together, and he'd married my cousin, Shirley the Whiner. Eddie wouldn't come at me with a suspicious, hostile attitude, and that would make my life much more pleasant. I stepped out of the apartment and waited in the hall. I got an eye roll from Gazzara when he walked out of the elevator, and then concern.
Are you okay?
He asked. Yes. The door was open when I got here. He was dead on the floor in the bedroom. No one else was here. I assume it's Stanley Zero, but I don't know for sure. Gazzara went about securing the crime scene, and a couple minutes later, Rich Spanner showed up.
We have to stop meeting like this, Spanner said to me. People are going to talk.
He entered the apartment, checked out the body, and returned to the hall.
What do you think?
I think he's got one too many holes in his forehead.
Yeah, Spanner said. I noticed that. I also noticed he reminds me a lot of the dead guy in Morelli's basement.
Because of the hole in his head?
And because you found him.
It's getting old.
I bet, Spanner said.
I repeated my mostly true story for Spanner. The ME slipped past us, followed by two paramedics and a forensic photographer.
Do you have anything else you want to share? Spanner asked.
I shook my head. No. Do you think that's Stanley Zero on the floor? Spanner moved into the doorway.
Hey, Gazzara, you have a tentative ID?
Well, looks like Stanley Zero. We got a driver's license here. He matches the photo, except for the hole in his head.
Chapter 16. I was shocked to find Lula still on the lot. What are you doing here? I asked her.
Waiting for you?
It's been over an hour and you're still here.
I have stuff to ask you. I want to know about the honeymoon. I'm thinking Paris or Tahiti.
Can you afford that?
Don't the groom pay?
Can Tank afford that?
He better, Lula said. I don't come cheap.
I thought the groom planned the honeymoon.
That was in the dark ages. And besides, Tank's busy. He don't got a lot of time for that stuff. He's got to watch Ranger's ass.
If it was me, I'd go to Paris, I told her. Better shopping, and it's a shorter plane ride. Italy would be good, too, if you're interested in handbags and shoes.
I never thought of Italy, but that's a good idea. I could always use a new handbag.
Why do you want to get married? I asked Lula.
I don't know. It just sort of popped into my head. And then one thing led to another, and before I knew it, I was at the lawyer drawing up my prenup. I guess it was one of those snowball things. You don't think I'm rushing into it, do you? I could postpone it to July, but I got a good deal on the hall for the reception. I'd have to give the hall up, and the fireworks wouldn't be the same. This way, I get the jump on July 4th.
Lula cranked her car over.
Where are we going now?
Back to Morelli's house. I should make sure Zook is okay. Everything looked status quo at Morelli's. It was early afternoon, but there was no activity. The crime scene tape was in place. No gawkers present. Lula pulled to the curb, took the key out of the ignition, and there was a sound like a grenade getting launched, and then, thud, something hit the passenger side door.
What the bejesus was that? Lula yelled. Incoming! We're under attack! Call SWAT! No, wait a minute. I hate those SWAT guys.
Mooner waved at me from Morelli's small front porch.
Sorry, he said. My bad.
I got out and examined the car door. There was a dent in it, and something was splattered from one end to the other. I cautiously touched it with my finger. Potato? I asked Mooner.
Yep, Yukon Gold.
Lula was around the car and next to me, and there was a frightening amount of white showing in her eyes. The whole eyeball was about the size of a tennis ball.
My baby, she yelled. My Firebird! Who did this? Who made this mess on my Firebird?
The big eyes narrowed, her face scrunched up, and she took a closer look, her nose just about touching the potato splatter.
Is this a dent?
This better not be a dent I'm seeing.
I didn't recognize you, Mooner said. Good thing I was all out of russet. Russet is like atomic.
Zook and Gary were standing behind Mooner.
We've been guarding the house, Zook said. Mooner is so cool. He knows all about homegrown security. He knows how to make potato cannons.
Mooner tapped the top of his head.
No grass growing here.
What's a potato cannon? Lula wanted to know.
All you need is PVC pipe and hairspray and a lighter, Zook said. And you can shoot anything out of it. You can shoot eggs and apples and tomatoes.
See, that's the thing about a potato cannon, Mooner said. You can stuff anything into it. You could shoot monkey shit out of a potato cannon. All you gotta do is find a monkey.
I know where there's a monkey, Lula said.
Whoa, Mooner said. Far out. You want to go get some shit?
Great. Just what I need. Mooner shooting monkey shit at passing motorists. It's illegal to shoot monkey shit on a Sunday, I told him. Have you had lunch? Zook was grinning.
We didn't eat lunch. We launched lunch.
I got a deductible, and I don't know if I'm covered for potatoes, Lula said, her eyes still narrowed.
I was having a hard time getting worked up over the dent in Lula's Firebird. I had bigger fish to fry. I had a pinky toe in Morelli's freezer, and tomorrow I'd have two toes if I didn't hang a scarf in the upstairs window. Everyone inside, I said. You stay out here too long and some new griefer will take over.
We're not playing minion fire anymore, Zook said. We're in charge of homegrown security now. We got weapons to make and posts to man. We're keeping the integrity of the crime scene. We're protecting the house.
Yeah, but what about the back? Lula asked. You can't see the back from here.
Dude, she's right, Mooner said. Man your potato cannon. Secure the yard.
Mooner, Zook, and Gary ran inside. Lula and I followed at a slightly slower pace.
You got a loony bin, Lula said to me.
Mooner was already at the living room window when we walked in.